Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. Navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these weekly conversations that we have, but often shy away from. It's another Tuesday, Elizabeth, and where are we off to today?
Good afternoon, Brad.
Hi.
Well, I'm here this week, and sorry I missed you last week, but we had, here's an interesting thing to start off. As I was thinking about how I was going to introduce today's show, and I was thinking, well, how much do I talk about what happened, about why I wasn't here last Tuesday? And I was thinking, you know, it's family emergency, which is true, but I started to think, well, it's a major family emergency. And I thought, ooh, I don't want to see major family emergency because that makes it sound like really big. But then in some ways it was really big, but not catastrophic big. Anyway, just the whole kind of overwhelm of the last week is still floating around in my brain and in my psyche and in my body, which is pretty much the topic for today, because I'm used to being a balanced person. Like, I can take on a lot of activities. I do well organizing my time. I don't feel stressed about that. I like to, you know, move a lot of plates around. And I don't know, I get a lot of pride out of being someone who can take on a lot of tasks and do them well. So that's nothing out of the ordinary. But last week, with our major family emergency and ending up being up in Monterey for 4 days and, you know, not being able to like get to teach or do my show or do my thing, just kind of focusing on kind of helping us through this transition, this, you know, health emergency. I, for the first time probably in my life, as for as long as I can remember, was having a really hard time resetting my nervous system. That by the fourth day of being at the hospital and caretaking, I found myself like not being able to literally catch my breath. It just felt like I was stuck. And, you know, 4 days of just kind of being in this stressful situation and out of my routine and kind of disconnected from all the things that are familiar to me. And even though we were sleeping poorly, but it was sleeping somewhat, would wake up in the morning and then find myself kind of back into this stress cycle of feeling anxious and not really sure, you know, what was coming up. And again, I've been through majorly stressful times and big family emergencies before. And so now a week out, it's interesting to reflect on why this time going through something this big that I had such a hard time recovering or finding my balance or, you know, catching my breath. And what ultimately helped is that my daughter came down and stayed so that I could get away for a couple days and just catch my breath. I'll just keep these interviews, catch my breath, kind of get back to those things that helped me reset. So along that lines, I came back to school to teach my classes, and I had three different students out of my three classes. So I have about 150 students. Three of them contacted me and said, you know, in some iteration of the story, I'm having such a difficult time with school and my classes or just with life, and I can't settle down, or I'm having panic attacks, or one student's like, I can't get out of my room to come to class. Some iteration of this feeling, this maximum overwhelm, and not quite sure how to move through this. And so I was thinking about kind of the overload that we're all experiencing, that even if you find yourself or consider yourself someone who handles stress well or can take on a lot of tasks or can process things and move on and not get too burdened or overburdened, I think in a 24-hour bad news cycle that it's very difficult to find any rest or to find rest that's appropriate. I again, after talking to my students, I don't feel like I'm alone in how I've been feeling. And I don't think that it's just because of a major family emergency on top of all of my other responsibilities. I think there's an overriding piece to this feeling of stress or overwhelm or not being able to catch my breath that was the thing that toppled my tower. And I believe it's that 24-hour bad news cycle and having too much access to things that are distressing and disturbing that are way out of my control. And so that's not helpful for the nervous system to have these feelings of stress and overwhelm or fear or anger and not having any control, any ability to change it at all. So I thought today we would talk about what stress looks like and stress overload, because stress itself is not necessarily a bad thing. It's actually really important. Stress is the driver for almost all of our life activities. You know, when we are almost in an accident, that stress response can cause us, you know, our nervous reaction or our instant reaction to jump back or to get out of the way. And then on the other hand, when we meet someone that we're attracted to, we have that same stress response. It releases this cortisol, and the excitement of seeing someone triggers the same dry mouth, hands sweaty, heart pounding. And so we don't want to not have stress, because that's what gets us out of bed and that's what helps us fall in love. And it's what helps us to be motivated to do things in our life. But there's a certain amount of stress that we can handle as human beings. And then there is a tipping point, and we find ourselves slipping into what they call stress overload. And, you know, stress overload becomes, in some ways, it can be insidious. You might not know that you've been tipped over, because you would imagine, oh, if I hit stress overload, then I will recognize it right away, because I'll fall asleep or I'll start to cry or I'll have a panic attack. But sometimes stress overload is more subtle than that. You might have subtle changes that you don't even recognize, because your body and your psyche adjust to more and more stress. So you don't often recognize stress overload until you can't function, can't catch your breath. The difference between, you know, carrying a lot of stress and stress overload is that you've exceeded your capacity to cope, and that the physical and emotional breakdown as a result of this chronic and intense stress becomes almost like a new normal. So we often recognize, you know, stress as tension, headaches, digestive issues, tension in our shoulders, our buzzing in our head, a heart pounding. Like, we recognize those. But chronic stress, which is associated with stress overload, can show up in behavioral changes. So you might start withdrawing from family and friends, those people that actually would usually offer you support, or you find yourself increasing your use of alcohol or tobacco, or playing more video games, or excessively watching sports. It's kind of a checking out. And those symptoms of stress overload, those chronic stress symptoms that come up in behavioral changes, can, you know, lead to suicidal ideation and major depressive disorder, and to, you know, panic anxiety disorder. And I don't know if we recognize the connection between the two when people present with suicidal ideation or anxiety or major depressive disorder, that we don't often recognize that people can be in a state of chronic stress or stress overload that's driving these symptoms. We tend to immediately believe it's some biological or disease or mental health issue, when it's really situational and lifestyle related. So I want to talk about that. How do we recognize stress overload? What are the things that we can do to balance our stress so it's in a healthy curve or a healthy range? And what are the things that you do to find yourself in a flow state? Different than what are the things you do to relax in the moment, but what are the activities that you do and may or may not be aware are actually helpful, but what are the activities that you do that help center you, get you into this quiet readiness state that will help you reset and be ready for more stress? That's the story. And good news, I have a friend in the studio with us today, Kyle Berlin, who is visiting in town. And we've had lots of conversations about stress because he tends to be a high achieving, high stress type of person. And so I thought he'd be the perfect one to also talk about some of his experiences in dealing with stressful life events as well. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're invited to be part of our conversation as well. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can find me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find us on Facebook or Instagram. You can leave me a message there. Truth be told, I'm not great at posting anything, but I will see messages if you leave them there. That's fine. You can also listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show, which would be fabulous. Go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you go. Leave a review so other people can find us and help us grow the show. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and start our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Don't forget the little things in life that make you happy. Yeah. Don't forget the little things in life that make you smile. Oh, cast your cares aside and think about the things that make you smile. Big white puffy clouds in a big sky. Finding as many cloud pictures as you can find. Happy yellow flowers and homemade pie.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we're going to talk about stress, things that are stressful. And different than just the daily stressors that we experience, like getting up, going to work, keeping the house clean, taking care of the kids, those things that we tend to be able to move through quite seamlessly, and be able to balance that with some, you know, time to kind of unwind each day. But the kind of stress I would like to talk about today is stress overload or chronic stress, that type of stress that becomes part of our daily living, that we never have a period of time where we're not feeling that gnawing, grinding piece of stress or sense of stress. And there's a few reasons for that. You know, there's this, and you can't see what I'm doing, but I'm doing the drawing for myself. There's a curvilinear nature of stress. And on the two far ends of it, one side is being checked out and the other part is being maxed out. And then if you move up, if you can picture this arch, if you move up the arch, there's this ideal state that we should aspire to, which goes from comfort or quiet readiness to motivated action. And ideally, if we're managing our nervous system, our lifestyle, our stress levels, we would vacillate between those two spots of being in comfortable, quiet readiness, kind of relaxed, but still aware, and then being able to kick it into, you know, active response when we need to take a test or deal with a crisis situation or, you know, deal with something that is out of the ordinary. And then ideally, we're able to reset our nervous system after the crisis back to this quiet readiness state. But as things have changed and become more complex in our society, as we've had access to 24 hours of bad news every day, and because we have access to technology that feels very seductive, it's hard to put it down. Also, there is this false belief that sitting and scrolling through social media or scrolling through YouTube videos or, you know, zoning out, looking at sports scores is somehow relaxing. It's not relaxing to the nervous system because all of the time on screens is continuously activating the nervous system as it's responding to the stimuli of whatever it is you're watching or looking at. So you may have your brain kind of be off while you're scrolling, but your nervous system is still responding. And so we have this kind of sneaky undermining of all of our nervous systems that has come veiled in a promise of, this is a relaxing way to spend your time. Scroll through videos, scroll through Instagram messages, but it actually continues to make you hypervigilant and stressed. And then, of course, being able to watch news 24/7, not healthy. And even people who watch news 24/7 and have it on the background will say, this really agitates me. I probably shouldn't watch it. But it's so, the way the news is presented, it's so compelling. It makes you almost feel like it's your responsibility as a citizen to watch it 24 hours a day. And that then becomes part of this chronic nervous system agitation that we don't even recognize that we're sitting in. And so because we don't have a capacity to reset our nervous system in a healthy way, most people, and I'll definitely see it in my students consistently, they now find themselves moving from completely checking out to maxed out. And nothing in between. They're either checked out, numbed out, scrolling, drinking too much, watching, too much television, or they are staying up all night for multiple nights on Red Bulls, manic and probably doing illicit drugs to keep themselves awake for multiple days. And then they crash. And as you can imagine, that's not healthy and it's not sustainable. And I don't know if we recognize the extreme of that because it's so normalized in our society to check out. So today I have with me in the studio is my friend Kyle Berlin. Hello, Kyle.
Hi, Elizabeth.
It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Does any of this resonate with you?
Definitely. 100%.
Where are you? Are you maxed out? Checked out, quiet readiness. Where are you right now?
Well, I think I like to think that at this point in my life, I'm at a healthier point in that curvilinear arc. I'm closer to the, I don't know about the peak, but in between those extremes of checked out or burnt out. And partly that's because I'm intentionally forging a life of sort of bohemian independent art making, which on some levels is stressful because there's economic realities, mm-hmm. but on another level is less stressful because I'm choosing not to subscribe to a certain calendar or schedule, and I feel lucky in being able to do that. But I mean, a lot of what you're saying resonates so much with me especially from my college years. I was an RA in college, and I was just
a resident advisor.
So I lived with younger students and was a kind of mentor. And I was astounded that basically everyone was, as you were saying, some form of depressed or anxious or sleepless or zonked out. And this seemed to me that this couldn't be just a confluence of individuals who had mental health problems.
Right.
That, in fact, it was a cultural problem that had to do with the college campus as a space, but I think more largely about the sort of precarity of the larger social and economic system in which we find ourselves, that young people, and I'm now on the outer edge of being a young person.
Because you're 30.
I'm now 30. Whew. But I think we, if I can still say we, as young people, feel that the precarity of that system, especially acutely. And so that leads to stress.
And again, like a lot of basic life skills that we fail to teach young people, how to manage stress and responsibilities is one of the things that we don't really teach. We have kind of the basic things where someone will say, take deep breaths, do meditation, do some yoga. Kind of the almost the platitudes of relaxation, but it doesn't address the inability or the lack of skill set that people, don't get. I'm thinking even of adults, not just young people, but what do I do? What do I do aside from, it's so easy to just watch Netflix, or it's so easy to just do YouTube or scroll through my phone, and I feel so stressed out. It takes too much energy to do other things that might be actually good for me. Mm. And those things are usually called flow state activities. Mm-hmm. But because we have these seductive tune-out methods that have become, you know, the norm, people send each other TikTok videos and cat videos and ha-ha, isn't it fun? And we think it's us sharing things that we do and we relax, but we don't recognize that it's just keeping us still psychically stimulated all the time.
Well, and that this is exactly the intent of these very, not to go large scale political about it, but the sort of, this is what technology companies and the sort of machinery of capitalism, which wants us to be productive. There's this great book by Jonathan Crary called 24/7. And it basically talks about how, you know, the 9-to-5 workday of Dolly Parton's era is no longer. Now we are 24/7 consumers. And even when we think we have leisure time, i.e. scrolling through YouTube or TikTok or Instagram, in fact, we are being commodified in that very instant because we are contributing to these giant technological companies. Bottom line, via our attention, which is in many ways the most precious thing that we have,
right,
and we give it away.
Right.
And I think that doesn't feel good. So searching for these more kind of fulfilling flow states, as you put it, and I think there are other terms as well, is, I think, one of the only ways out of this trap.
Yes, and also recognizing, also being able to recognize that what we're experiencing and feeling can be related to stress. Because as I mentioned, we recognize like, oh, I get headaches when I'm stressed, or my back hurts, or my stomach gets upset. But when it's chronic stress, people don't generally recognize, you know, the withdrawing from friends and family, feeling fatigue, feeling like you, you know, don't want to participate. Those are burnout signs that lead to suicidal ideation and depression. And so to make sure that we're recognizing what stress looks like in all of its forms, and also how to break the habit, the addiction to the algorithms of the phones and social media and 24-hour news cycle, because I'm not just going to beat on social media. It's like anything that can pull our attention and kind of numb our brain. We think it's numbing our brain, but it's actually activating it in different ways. Is part of that chronic stress that we're feeling as a culture. And, you know, in the idea of calming, there's social media apps that are actually called Calm that people are supposed to utilize,
right,
for calming down and settling. That just is also crazy to me. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Kyle Berlin. Our number is 805-781-3875. What are your thoughts about our stressful world? Are you able to find yourself in the quiet readiness state and able to move into motivated action when necessary? Or do you find yourself going from fully checked out to fully maxed out, just back and forth when you're going through the stressors of life? So what are you, when we talk about flow state, because I didn't want to jump too much into it, but I think we should talk about kind of how do we break the habit of scrolling or mindlessly watching television, or, you know, those things that we think are helping us calm down. One, break the habit of that, and two, start to discover what are those activities that help us reset our brain in a way that helps us stay focused and calms it. So there's two different mental states that we're really talking about when it comes to stress or chronic stress. One is relaxation and the other is checking out. And relaxation itself, by definition, is a deliberate, mindful process. That means that I am aware of my attempts to relax my mind and myself, while checking out is a form of mental disengagement that's not restorative. You know, it's checking out is mentally withdrawing from your surroundings. You're losing awareness of the present moment. You're trying to escape from and avoid difficult or stressful situations or emotions. This checking out is almost trying to dissociate from the things that make you feel awful. And at the end of this experience of checking out, when you check back in, people might notice that they feel numb or disconnected or even more overwhelmed after that checked out period of time than they did. True relaxation, the state that we're focusing on or want to talk about our goal to get to, is when you are relaxing, but you remain present in the moment. You observe your thoughts and your physical sensations without judgment. You recognize that things are starting to feel better in your body, that you feel a little more clear. Your nervous system slows down, your heart rate slows down. And when you kind of move out of this relaxed or flow state, you feel refreshed and restored. And so some of the most common flow activities, things like crocheting, mm-hmm. or swimming, or hiking, you know, or surfing, something that pulls all of your attention, but you don't check out. You have to stay focused and engaged in the moment.
Yes, I think this kind of hones in on what I was gesturing to before, that I think that this attention, the capacity to pay attention to our own feelings or what's happening in our brain, this sort of, you know, slight remove awareness of our own consciousness, mm-hmm. seems key to me, of being able to experience symptoms of stress and notice them and let them come and then let them go, mm-hmm. and not create a kind of feedback loop of either being not noticing them at all, which is dangerous, or over noticing them and sort of going into hyperdrive, mm-hmm. where you are hyperventilating either literally or figuratively. And so kind of, yeah, the practices of attention, whether that's something that we just kind of are naturally drawn to and love to do without thinking about it, mm-hmm. like surfing or any number of sort of I think of them as whole body. Mm-hmm. And that can include things like writing or reading, or, you know, it doesn't have to be that you're moving, but still it somehow takes your whole being and puts you into it.
Yes.
And yet you're still aware of your state.
Well, I think of, you know, last week when we were kind of working through our family emergency, the kids were doing a lot of puzzling, you know, jigsaw puzzling, because they're talking, but they're focusing on the attention and what they're doing with the puzzle pieces, so they can get into kind of this flow state of movement that takes their full attention. And reading, yes. And I love, again, things like crocheting or knitting, that your brain has to be activated and engaged, but you're still aware of what's happening and you can still be somewhat social. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, are you there?
Elizabeth, I'm sorry.
Hi, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Well, I mean, like I shared with the person that answered the phone, I've been through a plethora of stressful situations, and you know, everyone needs to find their zen, find their happy place, you know, find the best way for their, you know, for their spirit, their soul, and their self to reset. And one of the things I shared with the person that answered the phone is, you know, my son just turned 31 on Saturday, and I have a daughter turning 38 in a month.
Congratulations.
And I raised my kids with three priorities, and I still stand true to those three priorities today. And, you know, God or faith is number one, family is number two, and chasing the almighty dollar is number three. Don't chase the dollar before family and faith.
Mm. Got to take care of the economic self as well.
But this whole society is overwhelmed with too much you know, social media stuff. I'm gonna keep it Disney, because I'm one of very few. I'm 64. I've been married 39 years, and I'm one of very few people that is anti-social media. I don't have Facebook. I don't Instagram. I don't TikTok. I don't do any of that stuff.
So what's your flow activity? What's the thing that you get involved with and you lose track of time because it's so enjoyable?
Well, I'm a water person. I was born and raised in Michigan, and whenever I get in a peculiar state of mind, I have to go find the ocean or find a lake or find water and touch it and reminisce and think about, you know, what's going on. And especially when it's not on my, I'm not in control of it because I'm kind of a control freak about certain things. And if I can't control it, I have to give it up and put it in God's hands. I just, you know, I have to just give it up. It just, you know, you give it to a higher power. I mean, some people don't believe in God. Some people don't have the strong sense of faith like I do, you know. But I just believe that that there's too many, too much stuff that keeps people indoors, on the computer, on the TV. I think people need to go back to the roots and go outside and touch the earth. Touch the. My father-in-law used to love the mountains. And last year was a year where we had to bury him at age 93. And my mom died 100 days later at age 70 or 85. And so, I mean, you know, last year was one of those years that was, you know, tough.
It is tough. It is trying. And as you said, being able to have your three priorities there for you to tap into gives you that comfort. And I agree with you. Thank you, Steve, for taking the time to call. I agree because I also am a water person. And I think part of the reasons I had such a hard time kind of catching my breath last week is I couldn't get into the water. And I realized, I mean, I think I've always known that, you know, I swim a few days a week and that time in the water is that flow state because I'm conscious, I'm aware of what it feels like and I'm moving, but I'm also calming my nervous system and I do all of my good thinking that way. And to not be able to swim made me realize, oh, I need to find an alternative flow state activity, whether it's crossword puzzle or reading or something that if I can't physically move that I can still find it. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about stress and the difference between those daily stressors that we all kind of move through and chronic stress, stress overload, the kind that can actually change our behaviors and our physical being and that we might not even recognize as being driven by stress. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation with my guest, Kyle Berlin, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Been around the whole world, still ain't seen nothing like my neighborhood. And of all of the fancy satin and silk, my white cotton feels so good. Search high and low for a place where I can lay my burdens down. Ain't nothing in the whole wide world like the peace that I have found. In the little things and the joy they bring. It's the little things and the joy they bring. Yeah.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Sometimes I get into the music of the show and forget that we need to come back and actually start talking again because I choose the songs very carefully. And music also is my flow, being present, being in it, dancing a little, doing some singing, reducing the stress. What about you, Kyle? I mean, you said you were a high-strung youngster that I've known for a long time and all through your years. What do you do now, like, to find that calm, to settle your nervous system?
Well, yeah, I remember when I was younger, this feeling of if I wasn't being quote-unquote productive, I was wasting time. I sort of had a death grip on the clock and my relationship to time. As you know, I would go to school dances because I didn't want to miss out or I felt like I should, but I would bring my homework. Like, that's the level I was at.
Wow.
Which is, you know,
that's a lot.
I've come a long way. And I think a lot of that has to do with relinquishing this kind of anxiety about time and the passage of time and it's sort of slipping away. And also relinquishing the sense of being beholden to always being productive. I think, as I was saying earlier, there's so much pressure in our society to be productive. We talk about economic productivity and building towards this or that. And I think for me, what I'm interested in and what feeds me is these moments in my life when I'm not being useful to capitalism. I'm not being useful to anything in particular. Maybe I'm being useful to other people. I mean, I think that's a certain kind of flow state in a very direct way. When I've been able to sort of assist people with something very concretely, that's felt very rewarding to me. Mm-hmm. But other things like playing soccer or swimming in the ocean, I just did it this morning. Me and the humpback whales were flailing about out there. And this one's a bit more painful, but when I get into it, writing, and that's a whole nother topic. Why is it painful sometimes exactly. to get into these flow state?
Yeah.
But in those instances, I think that I'm sort of exiting the flow of time mm-hmm. for a moment. Mm-hmm. And sort of like our last caller, Steve, was saying, I mean, for me, it's a different higher power, but I'm handing myself over to a different entity and mm-hmm. exiting the sort of tiresome oneness of my own self and my own mind mm-hmm. and my own kind of clock and subscribing to another one for a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like there's so many things I like about that, the subscribing, you know, feeling the time. I feel that anxiousness of time the older I get because there's less of it forward than backwards. I feel that sometimes. Mm. And the idea of it's painful getting into the flow, which I think is why things like doom scrolling or drinking to excess or, you know, just zoning out on television is so seductive, because it's easy. You just kind of fall into and you let go of your conscious state, which again is not intentional relaxation. That's more of checking out. And I wanted to keep kind of going back to that difference between in our life, where if we're relaxing in an intentional and deliberate way, that takes some effort, ironically. But checking out is just kind of dissociating and going numb, and that doesn't refresh us. It doesn't bring back, you know, that sense of being competent or healing. So I want to focus on that intentional relaxed state, which takes some effort. Like you said, to sit down and start to write, you have to get your materials out. You have to kind of clear your deck so you can think about that. For if you're going to swim, you have to get to the pool. If you're going to work on crochet, you have to get your materials. You know, it takes some effort to. People oftentimes find that flow when they're cooking. They get all the ingredients, you know, they get lost in that space. But you have to make the time to do that. And I think that's what makes intentional relaxation a little challenging, because if you're already feeling stressed and maxed out, how do you move to that space? Like, what do you do to get through the pain of writing to make something happen?
Well, and how do you avoid the trap, which I've heard many people say of,
yes.
I need to do quote-unquote self-care
yes.
so that I can be more productive in the rest of my life,
yes.
in which you subsume your relaxation, make it subservient to your greater productivity, which I think is totally missing the point.
Interesting, yeah.
I don't know, but...
No, because that's a whole other piece of it, because I had notes about not to confuse self-care with relaxation, you know, because they're not necessarily the same things, because self-care can be a lot of things
right.
that aren't necessarily relaxing, that you all of a sudden feel like, well, I need to get a massage and I need to get my nails done, I need to get my hair done, because all of these things are going to make me feel better about myself. And there's almost an intensity in that that's not relaxing.
Right. And so much of self-care involves the labor of others,
that's
I think,
true too.
Which doesn't often get acknowledged. And I think there's an overemphasis on individuality in all facets of this topic, because in societally speaking, because I think we talk about mental health issues as an individual
yes.
issue. We mm-hmm. talk about self-care as something you have to do for yourself mm-hmm. rather than something that, you know, could in a more ideal society be baked into the kind of communitas, the community that we have where we care for each other, mm-hmm. rather than me having to pamper myself by paying somebody who's lower on the economic totem pole mm-hmm. to as an introvert, I find it often exhausting to be around other people, and I have to go away to recover. But at the same time, I think so much of our healing and the path forward has to do with having a broader sense of our relationship to others and to a greater sense of community, and thinking less of ourselves as in a silo. So mm-hmm. that, oh, we have problems. Well, it's not that I'm so unique that I have all these problems. What's wrong with me? And vice versa. Oh, I'm so great. It's not because I'm so great, really. It's because I'm not aware of the broader context in which I find myself and why I am the way I am, et cetera.
Because, and if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Kyle Berlin. And we're kind of exploring the idea of stress and the role of chronic stress in our lives. And is it being exacerbated, again, by this 24-hour bad news cycle that we have access to? Because I mentioned at the top of the show, I really got flooded by life last week. You know, I was handling all the things that I handle and all the roles I do in my life. And then one extra thing happened that was a big major family emergency. And I really struggled getting my feet underneath me. And that surprised me. And I had to really make an effort to reach out to get help. And so when you talked about that being part of that greater community, and how we manage chronic stress, it isn't a siloed experience, as you would say. It's more of a group experience. And as I mentioned, chronic stress, which makes it challenging to deal with, one of the symptoms of it are behavioral changes, like withdrawing from social
right.
experiences, withdrawing from other people, becoming very insular, which then, you know, feeds on itself. So how do we as individuals kind of do that preventative care so that we don't fall into the chronic stress, which relates to behavior changes? Our number is 805-781-3875. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, how it is you find your flow state, or do you find yourself burdened by, you know, the sense that you need to be invested in scrolling and watching and screening 24/7, or how do you find that peace? And I believe that getting help from my girls last week and all of our friends who immediately, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do, were some of the keys to helping me feel like I could breathe again. Mm-hmm. Because my first reaction was, well, I take care of everything all the time anyway. It's just one more thing. But when I couldn't, it forced me to say, I give, and to let the people in my life step in. And also, I was very conscious of not checking out because, again, I want to make clear that when we talk about relaxation or chronic stress, there's two very different states that I'm really trying to identify. And one is an intentional form of relaxation where we meet with someone, we have a cup of coffee, or we talk, or we go for a walk, or we go for a swim, or we needlepoint or knit together, whatever those things are. But as you said, kind of in union with someone as well, that's intentional relaxation. That brings us a state of refreshed, being resettled, being able to move forward. Checking out is what's actually, unfortunately, more common today, where people go to the extreme of just going numb, screens, scrolling, being isolated, feeling, you know, and it's interesting because you said, Kyle, and I talk about that as an introvert, I need to retreat sometimes to refresh. But I question that as well, because I don't know if the retreating, that sounds more like checking out.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, what does it mean to retreat? And what does one do when one retreats?
Okay, that's fair.
Because I think, you know, there's...
I would argue that people retreat and they numb out.
Right.
They start scrolling through Instagram and just to
right.
block everything out. So when you retreat, are you doing, you know?
Well, I think the language that we use to talk about this is super interesting and
okay.
important, because there's this, what do we mean when we say numb? I mean, I think it's right. I think it's the right term, but it's a little bit of a metaphor. I mean, it's not that we're actually numb. It's something. What is it that has gone numb mm-hmm. when we enter that scroll, so mm-hmm. to speak?
True.
Is it? And I would argue, perhaps, I'm not sure this is right, but I would propose that perhaps it's our attention, our attentional capacity, and we've sort of given it over to something that our sort of truest self doesn't actually want to be attending. We're not able to want what we want to want, is the trap that we're falling into, because we're instead wanting or we think we're making a choice mm-hmm. when in fact what we're doing is falling into a trap, which has been very carefully laid for us by decades of research into the science of advertising and addiction. And, you know, the same people who made slot machines for mm-hmm. Vegas are the people who designed the apps and the smartphone interfaces to be maximally addictive. And so we fall into this kind of trap which has been set for us. And then I think that phenomenologically, that creates a kind of what we're calling numbness yeah. because it wasn't – some part of ourselves still knows that this isn't actually our choice, that there's something that we would maybe rather be doing. And again, sort of like our caller said, I'm a big proponent of just going outside mm-hmm. and walking wherever you happen to be sort of apart from this attentional apparatus which has been laid to ensnare our perceptions and our senses.
And I think, again, it's not just the scrolling and the phones. I think YouTube scrolling is just as addictive in such a it posts itself or posits itself as a kind of this benign, let's figure out how to fix a leak in our sink. And then the next thing you know, you're 14 different, you know, videos down the road and watching a cat, you know, leap across a pond. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. And Sean, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
So I got a practical thing, and then I got kind of a silly thing that I do. The practical thing is that I have programmed ChatGPT. There's something called Ad Fuentes Media Bias Chart.
Okay.
And so if you look that up, they've done a great job, like, ranking various media outlets from wonderful at the very top and, you know, just complete another nonsense at the bottom. And so I have programmed ChatGPT in the morning to make me a list of 20 U.S. headlines and 20 global headlines from the top 10% of that Ad Fuentes media bias mm-hmm. chart. And so I get informed. I get a look at the headlines. I don't necessarily need to know everything in the world that's going on.
True.
Even within that story, I don't need to know everything that's going on. I pick and choose what I want to look at, but I get generally informed and then, you know, take it from there. And I try to stay away from op-ed, and video is just toxic. Stay away from video. So, you know, I read my news and I curate it very, very carefully. You know?
Yeah, I like that you set a perimeter around what information you're going to take in, and then you feel good for the day to be informed and go about your business.
Yeah, you know, I'm an activist, so wanting to counter the horrible things that are happening, mm-hmm. I don't need to be distracted by them and emotionally disabled by them. Mm-hmm. I need to be focused on what I'm doing, you know.
That's such a great term, too, because it's so easy to become emotionally disabled when you're in overwhelm. I that's very well said.
Thank you. And then the
silly thing.
The silly thing that I do is that there's some evidence in the world of quantum physics, that everything we're experiencing is a gigantic projection from elsewhere.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm in, as far as I'm concerned, I'm living in the middle of a really interesting movie. I don't take it all that seriously. you know, some of it you look at and you just go, you know, Donald Trump is president. He's been president twice. That's not credible. You know, that wouldn't happen in the real world. So, you know, I dismiss a lot of it as fantasy, silly. It's fun. You know, it's entertainment. It is the most interesting form of entertainment that has ever been created. There's a whole world being projected around us with all sorts of drama happening. So, you know, don't take it real seriously. That's all.
I appreciate that, Sean. Thank you. Your insights have been helpful. And I'm going to circle back around with you one of these mm-hmm. days, because I remember reading this great article that said we had fever dreamed as a collective our current social situation. And so I'm going to revisit that, and I expect you to call in then, okay?
Oh, I will. Yeah, that's great.
Thanks for calling. Enjoy your day. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I just forgot my name for a second. Our number is 805.
You're checking out.
I totally checked out. I was thinking about the fever dream of reality that we've created. 805-781-3875 is our number. And George, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind? Oh, are you there, George? Hi, George, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hello.
Miss Bear. I'm calling because I live in a small town, and I heard y'all talk about treating yourself and all that, and I do like to treat myself from time to time. My vice is those pumpkin spice lattes. You know, around this time of year, they're you know, every now and then they're good. But my question is, you know, it's like fall time now, but I went to the mall the other day and they had Santas up already, and that brings me a lot of stress because it's like time moves so quickly, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, where I'm from, we don't celebrate Christmas till after Easter, right? But you know, now it's like Christmas and Halloween and you know Hanukkah, all that just comes once, all at once. So, what do you do about that?
Right, so you're feeling, and it kind of made me get tense as you were mentioning it too, that feeling of time passage is so intense that you can't enjoy any of the seasons because you're in the middle of a season and the next season is being promoted.
It's you're sort of the inexorable march of time has blindfolded you and conked you over the head, and you don't know what's happening. You're getting swirled around in the hot tub time machine of all existence because of the corporate advertising, which wants to sell you more holiday decorations.
And it sounds like, George, you just want to enjoy your pumpkin spice latte without thinking about Santa.
That's right. I mean, I like Santa, don't get me wrong, but I'll have to look up that word that you just used. But yeah, I think that sounds about right.
You know, and I appreciate that because part of the idea of the chronic stress, not to make light of it, is that when we feel we've lost control, right, of too many things in our lives, and it's hard to just be able to settle in place, and so that you can't even enjoy something that's simple, like being outside, having a pumpkin spice latte, chatting with a friend, you can't enjoy that because you're constantly being reminded how fleeting everything is. So even the moments become less enjoyable.
Exactly.
So I recommend, George, that you get some pumpkin spice latte and keep it at home so that you can pull that out at rare occasions and just enjoy it without being at the mall.
All right. Who needs them? Yeah, that's what I say.
George, invite some of your neighbors over. You can have a whole pumpkin spice latte party.
Yes.
Meet some new folks and start organizing for the revolution, George.
Yes. George, thank you for taking the time to call. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Call again.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. I want to kind of focus a little bit about some practical things around stress. Because I don't think it fixes itself in one conversation or one moment of awareness, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have the TV on 24/7. Maybe I need to take more intentional relaxation and not just check out. And I just can't emphasize that enough, is that when I look around at my students and people in my family and friends that I have, that I see this checking out behavior of I'll just go on, you know, video games for a half hour just to relax. Well, that's not relaxing. It might feel like you've stopped being productive or you've stopped feeling the stress that's in front of your mind. But research shows that does not refresh your nervous system so that you're more able to go back and do those things, those daily tasks of living, you know, or to confuse ourselves that if I check out, you know, scrolling for 15 minutes through TikTok videos, somehow that's refresh me. No, that doesn't work. It's like you said, it's tricking you or trapping you. And so how do we make the step? Because I feel like in some ways I'm yelling at the naked emperor and everyone else thinks I'm foolish. It's like, no, this all works really well. I use the Calm app, or I, you know, just make 15 minutes on a video game, or I have the news on all day and I feel like I'm, you know, part of a community. I don't know how we switch it, but I'm going to give you five simple things to do that will settle your nervous system to then help you get a little clear, because we have to, you know, clear out some brain fog in order to have the energy to move forward. So these five simple things are move, eat, hydrate. Is that five? Move, eat, hydrate, sleep, and breathe. Move, eat, hydrate, sleep, and breathe. And moving, again, it doesn't mean you have to go to a formal exercise class or that you need to run 15 miles. You can simply get up and walk around the block or put on a song and dance in the backyard or get up and do some intentional stretching. That movement starts to settle the nervous system. And then eat small meals throughout the day, you know, to keep that blood sugar at a nice even level. Real foods, fruits and vegetables, small amounts throughout the day. Hydrate, drink enough of your fluids, get your electrolytes. Sleep normal hours. And what does that mean, to sleep normal hours? Well, usually it's between 11 and 7. Anything after 1 in the morning tends to not reset your rhythms correctly. It's like you need to shut down your body the way you have to reset your computer every now and then so that all the updates can happen. Sleep is how we do that as human beings. Our sleep time needs to be restful. It needs to be consistent. So that your body knows that it's time to relax. You should not sleep with your phone, near your phone, with headphones in. Anything that keeps your brain actively processing while you're trying to sleep is not serving you. It is not restful. It does not reset to have headphones on and listen to noise or music while you sleep. Research bears that out. And then finally, just that breathing. 5 slow breaths, not deep aggressive breathing. You don't do special box breathing or get on your head or be a yogi. Really just closing your eyes and allowing yourself to expand your belly as you inhale and contract as you exhale. Just still, just 5 breaths can start to clear space. And then hopefully you'll find your way forward to something that helps you flow, that gives your life a little sense of excitement and joy, and takes a little effort and is intentional. Kyle, thank you for hanging out with me today.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
The hour goes too fast. This has been A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook and leave me a message if you want to find us there. Please podcast our show and leave a review and share it with friends so we can grow our community, or listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. As always, thank you to Brad for taking care of us right here, answering phones all day. Thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Hey, how you doing? How's your day going? You know that you can always say what's on your mind. Are you on your way home? I warm up your plate when you arrive. Can you go take off your shoes? Hot water in the tub for you. Don't have to, but I love to do. Bartender, I pour a drink, a movie on to entertain. I'm down to do the little things. Just wanna take some time to thank you and let you know just how you make me proud. The good times make up for the bad ones. I see you trying and I don't know how. You keep up with me when you're working, switch your timing. When our schedules aren't aligning, that's a sign that it's okay to finally tell the world that you are more than enough, enough, enough for me. Ready when you're waking up. Breakfast on the table, no, you like eggs and nails scrambled up. Pancakes, bacon, OJ on the side. Pack your bag with extra clothes, your toothbrush and a Louis Vuitton. Love notes for when you on the road. Cleaned your watch and Cuban links, a pillowcase for you to take. Boy, you deserve a little thing. Just wanna take some time to thank you and let you know just how you make me proud. The good times make up for the bad ones. I see you trying and I don't know.